You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, Tokers and Tokettes. It is Monday, February 7th, 2011, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us here. I hope you had a good weekend. Mine was pretty good. Glad to have you here. Also joining us here in the studio, our own engineer, the maestro, Ganja John.
What's up, Russ?
Oh, anything good happened to you this weekend?
Oh, shit. Start a checklist.
Yeah, we'll talk all about that in hour two, Toker Talk Radio. We got a lot of weekend stories to tell. Before we get to all those, though, we also have to welcome from our virtual studio in Grastoria, Oregon, the lovely Cannabis Carrie.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Carrie.
How was your weekend?
My weekend was great.
Happy Super Bowl, Russ. I'm so happy for your team.
What? You mean...
I was really happy for your Green Bay Packers team.
The Packers won? You mean I didn't have to shave my head for losing the bet? Oh, damn it! No, I'm just kidding. I was the au gratin cheesehead this weekend, and so I had to shave my head for the outfit. And it's kind of nice. It's nice and aerodynamic. Yeah. I kind of like it.
You run fast.
So you were busy with Bob Marley's birthday, I understand.
I was. We had a great weekend. The concert went great. It was packed. Everybody had a good time. I had a great time on Saturday. I had a great time on Sunday. I'm going to chalk it up to a successful weekend for everyone.
Yeah.
Except the Steelers.
You know, a very odd coincidence in this, too, is that Bob Marley's birthday and Ronald Reagan's birthday are the same birthday, February 6th.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Kind of polar
opposites. I don't think his birthday's actually on the 6th, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it is. And we had our party on the 4th. That's right. Okay.
I was looking that up, February 6th, you know. And other odd coincidence is that Bob Marley died in 1981 and President Reagan was shot in 1981. At least that gives Bob Marley an excuse for not acknowledging AIDS in 1983. Anyway, let's get to our show. On today's show, we have got all sorts of great stuff for you. We're going to do some government at work today, and we are speaking with United States Congressman Representative Jared Polis from Colorado. All sorts of great questions. We're going to talk to him about the KushCon in Denver that he was at, the new regulations in Denver, Colorado, and his Fearless campaign, fearlesscampaign.org, where he's trying to get the politicians to be a little more fearless in introducing marijuana law reform. Also, a radical rant at the end of the show. I'm going to tell you all about drug dogs and just how unreliable they can be. And, of course, today is Roots Monday, so Carrie will bring us some Roots Monday music from John Gilliatt coming up right at 20 after the hour. But first, our hemp headlines with Cannabis Carrie. What's in the news today?
Well, today we're going to go to Canada. You know, religious defense hasn't been very successful in the U.S. It doesn't look like it's going to be successful in Canada either. We're also going to go to Colorado, where a Cleveland barbecue joint is looking at marketing a new product. But first up, from the Wall Street Journal, they are linking the spark of the Egypt uprising to a marijuana prohibition case. So that'll be interesting. We'll tell you that first.
All right. We'll get that right after this break here on Normal Show Live. Thanks for being here. Stay tuned with the news and the music coming up next. And, of course, Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio will take your calls and discuss these issues further. It's Normal Show Live. We're back right after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
In today's busy world, we're inundated by advertising for all types of pharmaceuticals that come with a laundry list of potential side effects. Shouldn't you have better medical choices? Natural alternatives to pills pushed by Big Pharma? At Alternative Medical Choices, you could choose natural, safe, and effective alternative therapies that are right for your budget without nasty side effects. Cannabis, or marijuana, has been a legal medicine in the Pacific Northwest since 1998. Our doctors will help determine your qualifications for a medical marijuana recommendation in Oregon, no matter where you live. Our massage therapist will ease your aches and stress with soothing hemp seed oil or cannabis-infused massage salves. We also offer acupuncture, Reiki, and other alternative health therapies. Call Alternative Medical Choices in Portland, Oregon at 503-288-5579 or visit our website at www.altmedchoices.com. We specialize in out-of-state recommendations. That's www.altmedchoices.com or call 503-288-5579.
As High Times Senior Cultivation Editor, I'm often called into the field and asked to sample or even identify exotic strains of marijuana in their natural habitat. Now, for the first time, I've compiled more than 120 of my favorite strains into this single field guide designed to fit into your pocket as you travel the world in search of your favorite plant. From Friend's Closet Grow Room to the wilds of Northern California, this single guide covers all of today's best-known strains, plus heirlooms and throwbacks, including High Times quality photos and information on each variety's genetic heritage and growing characteristics, plus my personal notes on aroma, flavor, and potency. So this is Danny Danko, author of the official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains, wishing you good times and great ganja.
The official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carry.
The Wall Street Journal is reporting that two police who are accused of brutally killing a young man in Alexandria, Egypt, have escaped jail and are at large. The death of Khalid Saeed helped trigger Egypt's popular uprising. The escape occurred when police fled their post during clashes on January 28th, and police stations throughout Alexandria, Egypt's second largest city, were set on fire. The defense and prosecution lawyers told the Wall Street Journal about the escape on Sunday. Witnesses say that Saeed was beaten by police in an Alexandria internet cafe after he was arrested in June. Gruesome pictures of his misshapen and unrecognizable face after the beating that left him dead were posted on a Facebook page that protested his treatment. It was his death under police custody that became a rallying point. It was the Facebook page protesting his death and showing the pictures of his beaten face that was the first to call for Egyptians to take to the streets against the government last month. The police defense is that Mr. Saeed choked to death on a bag of marijuana that he tried to swallow when he saw policemen come into the internet cafe. The lawyer for the police has said that the damage to Mr. Saeed's face occurred during an autopsy. The state charged the policeman who allegedly killed Saeed with unlawful arrest and torture. The state prosecutors have since dropped the torture charge in January. The limited charges symbolize to many the impunity that Egyptian police have enjoyed while abusing their power. Prosecutors rested their case on January 22nd, just days before the protests began. The defense was due to begin their argument on February 26th. The lawyer for the man killed says that the charge of unlawful arrest will mean that the police would only serve a few weeks even if they were convicted. The family is trying to persuade the courts to add the charge of murder. The lawyer who heads the defense team confirmed on Sunday that the two police that were being tried for the crime escaped from the security police base in Alexandria where they were being held. He said that he has since talked to one of the men who told him that the police opened the detention center gates when the base was being overwhelmed by thugs. He said that he believes the two men will turn themselves in at a later date. The spark that began Egypt's revolution came when Mr. Saeed, a small frame 28-year-old, walked into the SpaceNet Cafe, one of his regular hangouts just yards away from where he lived with his mother. The cafe's owner said he saw the two men in plain clothes with pistols on their belt come in and began hitting Mr. Saeed. He said they picked up the small man and started swinging him headfirst into a marble shelf. The owner of the cafe and his sons ran to push the policemen out, but they left dragging Mr. Saeed out by the hair. A crowd gathered around and watched as the men smashed Mr. Saeed's head repeatedly against an edge of some stone stairs. A doctor in the crowd was heard shouting to the policemen, "What are you doing? doing. He's already dead, as the beating continued. According to a family lawyer, Mr. Saeed was a target because he posted a video clip on YouTube that purports to show the policeman dividing up a bag of confiscated marijuana with others to resell on the street. The clip was found on Mr. Saeed's computer after his death. The family said he was superstitiously downloaded the video to his cell phone using a Bluetooth device while one of the policemen was showing it to his friends in the cafe. According to lawyers for the policemen, they say the police were looking for Mr. Saeed in connection with two other cases of draft dodging and theft. But when they confronted him, he resisted arrest. They say the defense will produce witnesses that will testify that Mr. Saeed's face was unblemished until he arrived at the morgue. Senior forensic pathologists from Denmark and Portugal have dismissed the two Egyptian coroner's reports that list his death was due to choking on a 3-inch by 1-inch bag of marijuana. The family says the choking was faked and have since produced a certificate that confirms Mr. Saeed's military service. His killing has sparked a series of demonstrations in Alexandria and Cairo last year, demanding an end to the torture by the police. Victims' rights groups in Egypt say police abuses have rarely been pursued and even less often successfully prosecuted. A Human Rights Watch reported that was released on January 30th called Torture in Egypt an Epidemic, and that report estimated that about 5,000 people are being held in Egyptian jails without trial, and some for over a decade.
Yeah, and you know, Egypt is one of the countries, one of the 32 countries that does still have a death penalty on its books for some drug cases. United States is one of those, by the way. You can get the death penalty for 60 kilograms of marijuana trafficking. But Egypt is in there along with Iran, China, Saudi Arabia, Vietnam, Singapore, Malaysia. The first execution for drugs in Egypt took place in 1989. This also leads us to another story that is being reported by StopTheDrugWar.org. In the Drug War Chronicle, Philip Smith does some excellent work there. U.S. citizens being jailed in Egypt. It was jailed there since December for importing hemp oil, non-drug hemp oil, and was facing the death penalty because in Egypt, when they translated it, they didn't have a separate word for hemp versus cannabis. It's all cannabis to them. So they thought he was importing hash oil. And he was sentenced to die, except for these uprisings that have been happening in Cairo. They stormed the prisons and released a lot of the prisoners, so he's free at this point. But he's still kind of in a legal limbo. So interesting how much marijuana played a part in these uprisings in Egypt. And great story out there in the Wall Street Journal. I encourage everyone to check it out.
A popular barbecue joint franchise in Cleveland is about to enter the world of cannabis cuisine. Clevelanders already enjoy Hot Sauce Williams barbecue joints, but now Colorado is about to experience the restaurant's famous sauce with a new twist and a new name. Roulette is the Cleveland businessman who convinced Greg Williams to test a marijuana-infused version of his famous rib sauce. Williams is a special project manager for the Cleveland-based restaurants. With help from a Denver lab, they came up with a version of the chain sauce infused with cannabis. Williams says that large-scale production might still be a few months away, as they want to make sure the marijuana doesn't alter the product over time. The new product that they produce, based off the popular Cleveland hot sauce Williams, will be called Hot Sauce Williams. They say that since barbecue sauce is such a strong flavor, it alters the flavor less than other cannabis-infused foods. But there is a hitch. Although it will still be called barbecue sauce, you won't be able to barbecue anything with it. If you cook it over 300 degrees, it will lose its potency. Now, Roulette thinks that it won't matter as much to consumers and says he hopes that it will become the Heinz of medical marijuana sauces. Although Colorado law makes starting a business that involves production of cannabis-infused products expensive and time-consuming, he said the potential for the edibles in the marketplace is huge, and people are ready. He says that people are sick and tired of pot-infused brownies. Plus, many people who are sick with autoimmune disorders do not want 100 milligrams of sugar when they eat their marijuana. Hot Sauce Williams has been a staple of Cleveland restaurants since 1964, when five brothers from Mississippi founded their first barbecue joint. Today, the company is owned by their cousins, Deborah Sharon and Greg Williams. They already sell their sauce in a bottled form, along with a few bakery items that may get a cannabis makeover down the line. They are famous as well for their sweet potato and pecan pie. Greg Williams says the national attention will give their other products more exposure as well. Sounds like a sound business plan.
Mm-mm-mm. Pot Sauce Williams hot sauce on ribs infused with cannabis. That's like the ultimate perpetual motion machine, right? You go and eat the hot sauce, and it makes you get the munchies to eat more of the ribs that have the hot sauce that gives you the munchies to eat more of the ribs. What a perfect business model. I cannot wait to have me some Pot Sauce Williams when I get back to Colorado.
Using a religious defense for use of marijuana in Canada might not take you any farther than it would in the States. A judge has thrown out a legal challenge that claimed Canada's marijuana laws violate the freedom of religion provision of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Two Toronto men who were both reverends in a group called the Church of the Universe took up the challenge in their defense of marijuana trafficking. The men allegedly sold marijuana to undercover police officers back in 2006. Now, the amount of marijuana sold was a small quantity, and the two officers involved were posing as members of the church. Since the church uses marijuana as a sacrament, they were arguing that the law infringes on their freedom of religious rights. Prosecutors, however, argued that allowing the church's application would effectively legalize marijuana in Canada, since anyone facing a drug charge would claim it as a religious right. The decision was released earlier today by Justice Thea Herman of Ontario's Superior Court and found that the church does not deserve protection under the charter as a religious, or the church does, excuse me, deserve protection under the charter as a religious group. However, she also ruled that Section 1 of the Charter of Rights and Freedom possesses a reasonable limit on that religious freedom. She says that it does not see trafficking as a religious act that deserves protection. From her ruling, she wrote, quote, "I do not accept that providing cannabis to people in the basement was a religious act." She also wrote, "They may well believe that providing marijuana to others is a good thing to do. That does not, however, transform its distribution into a religious belief or practice." She also ruled that providing a legal exemption for those who use marijuana for religious purposes is not feasible due to the difficulties in identifying both the religious user and the religious use of cannabis. She said that the proposed institution of a system of state inquiries into people's religious beliefs has the potential to undermine the value that Canadians place on freedom of religion rather than promote it. Walter Tucker and Michael Baldassaro, the church's founders, say members are encouraged to surround themselves with the holy tree of life, not just by inhaling it, but by wearing it, growing it, and eating it. With their religious defense now thrown out, they're both facing charges of marijuana trafficking, and their case is due back in court on February 21st.
I've said it before. I'll say it again. You run a religious defense for your cannabis use will earn you plenty of time in a cell to study the Bible or whatever your holy book might be. It's not the way it should be, folks. It's not, but it's the way it is. And we've seen this happen time and time again in U.S. courts. Now we're seeing it in Canadian courts. Let's just legalize for everybody for whatever reason they may choose, religious, medical, spiritual, or just because it's a Friday night.
And this one, I think, Russ, is just an update from a story that you reported on Thursday.
Yes.
About the 911 caller that called in to ask about growing. Well, we have the audio, and I thought it would be fun to actually listen to that stupid stoner make his 911 call.
911, what's the location of your emergency?
Let's not get into that yet. I have a question.
Is this an emergency, sir?
Depends.
Well,
not really.
If it's not an emergency, you don't call 911, sir.
Well, I have a legal question.
Well, it's not. Is this an emergency?
I don't know what that means.
Is it life-threatening or an act of crime in progress?
Crime in progress, possibly.
What's going on?
I was just growing some marijuana. I was just wondering what how much, you know, trouble you can get into for one plant.
You're growing marijuana and you want to know how much, depends on how big the plant is.
It's only a seedling.
No, it's possession.
Okay.
You can get pinched for a roach in a car.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the info.
You're welcome.
Goodbye.
And by the way, 911 operator, it doesn't matter.
You want to hear my call?
That was the best part.
I'm sorry. I stepped all over it. Sorry about that. But it doesn't matter the size of the plant, even if it's just a seedling. I believe in the state he was in, the penalty is 7 years for cultivation, yeah. And the federal penalty is 5. The fine in that state was something like $15,000, and the federal fine something like $150,000. So, look, folks, next time, don't call 911 to get your pot info. Go to normal.org. We've got all the state laws right there for you.
I like how she used our lingo, though. You can get pinched for a roach.
You get pinched for a roach. Yeah, that's good.
Let's pinch a roach.
Let's pinch a roach right now. We'll be right back.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? Reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? Reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
I'm a doctor.
I'm a lawyer.
I'm a journalist.
I'm a student.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a representative.
I have cancer.
The outdated laws of prohibition are more dangerous than the plant itself.
I lost my scholarship.
I was fired.
20 million arrests since 1965. This is getting ridiculous.
Our prisons are overcrowded with nonviolent offenders.
We have the opportunity to change.
This is costing our country billions of dollars.
Making my family and I fight in a courtroom is difficult enough when I'm already fighting through chemotherapy.
There's no reason to be scared by tradition anymore.
We can stop this.
We can stop this.
We are the American people.
We can stop this.
And you have our support.
We're old.
Young.
Straight.
Gay.
We're every race and nationality.
And we're not going to give up.
You can tax it.
You can regulate it.
Apply age restrictions.
You can create millions of new jobs.
We can save our economy.
President Obama?
It's time for legalization.
Legalization?
Yes.
We
can.
This has been a public service announcement.
High in the Rockies. For the first time ever, High Times is hosting the Medical Cannabis Cup in the Mile High City, Denver, Colorado. Come to the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup. There'll be cultivation seminars with High Times editors Danny Danko and Nico Escondido, plus other experts and cannabis celebrities. Attend activism seminars with leaders of the medical marijuana movement, including advice on how to start your own cannabis business. Meet industry leaders in medical cultivation, hydroponics, smokable glassware, hemp products, dispensary supply, cannabis accessories, and more. Plus, Medical Cannabis Cups will be awarded to the best indica, sativas, concentrates, and edibles entered by legally operating medical marijuana dispensaries and growing collectives. And don't forget Saturday night when the Medical Cannabis Cup will host the Extravaganza with surprise musical guests. The High Times Medical Cannabis Cup, April 2nd and 3rd, 2011 at Exto in Denver, Colorado. Visit MedCanCup.com for details. Be part of the growing cannabis industry. Come to the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup in Denver. It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we bring you tunes for Roots Monday, our celebration of the music that evolved into the popular modern music of today. We pick the best of blues, country, folk, and jazz with a 420 feel and serve it up for you every Monday. Brought to you by Cannabis Carry in Astoria, Oregon, and CannabisFantastic.com. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
You know, Cannabis Carrie does our hemp headlines every day, and then once a week she takes a break and turns to her musical side. If you haven't had a chance to catch her folk music show on coastradio.org, check it out every Wednesday. What time's it on, Carrie?
It's on at, it starts at 10:06 PST. We have a few minutes of world headlines before my show. All right. And it runs till noon.
Yeah, 10 to noon Pacific time. That there would be 1 o'clock to 3 Eastern time. Check it out, coastradio.org. Carrie, what do you got for us for Roots Monday today?
Well, today we have a Canadian-born artist, John, I think it's pronounced Galay. I'm not really sure. I don't speak Canadian. But John Galay, a Canadian-born musician, has been playing the guitar since he was 9 years old. By the time he graduated from high school, he was ready for his first tour across Canada and the U.S. Now, after his first tour, he took time to formally study his art. He studied with jazz masters at Capilano College, and it's there where he fell in love and was inspired by the flamenco guitar. Taking his cue from flamenco masters like Paco de Lucia, Vicente Amigo, and Nino Giselle, he spent the next 6 years studying flamenco only, practicing 8 to 10 hours a day. In 1995, John won Best Acoustic Guitar Performance in the Music West Star Frets competition, and in Vancouver's Unplugged competition in 1996. He also won the grand prize at the Boss Loop Station 2009 Championship National Finals. Gallet continues to offer new direction and contemporary expression to flamenco, nouveau flamenco, and flamenco rumba. He tours festivals and headlines concerts with his quartet, which is a bass player, two guitars, and percussion. He even finds time to perform regularly with Vancouver's Hot Gypsy Jazz Club Quartet, Gypsilero. Today's tune is called Smoke, and it highlights the zesty flamenco nouveau style that has become Gallet's signature style.
All right, this sounds like good stuff. John Gallet with Smoke for your Roots Monday.
song for your iPod? Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing Media, and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
76% of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers. And nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana. And over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and co-workers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Stropp, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
NORML stands for Reforming America's Prohibitionist Marijuana Laws, and that cannot happen without directly engaging our government and elected officials. Local NORML chapters and other affiliated activists relentlessly lobby our lawmakers for a change we can believe in and report on their strategies and progress in this segment we call Our Government at Work.
All right, folks, in Our Government at Work today, we're pleased to be joined by U.S. Representative Jared Polis, a Democrat from Colorado. Representative Polis, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be on.
You were elected in 2008, and you just won re-election in 2010, but you haven't been shy about calling for a need for marijuana law reform. I got to meet you in person out there at KushCon in Denver. How has your stance on marijuana reform affected your interactions with your colleagues in the House?
You know, what a great event that KushCon was as well. Just a very successful trade show. It's exciting to see all the jobs and the companies that are being created in this sector. I find that a lot of members of Congress privately agree that we need to change our drug policy. They're just still too timid or scared to come public with it, and that's kind of what I find. I find very few that are kind of hardcore on the other side.
Okay. And looking forward to work in the United States Congress as far as marijuana law reform goes is kind of troubling sometimes at best for us in the reform community, because we know how slow the gears grind there up on Capitol Hill. Representative Barney Frank and Representative Ron Paul have been longtime stalwarts for reform in various arenas, from industrial hemp to medical marijuana. Have you been working with those representatives, and do you have any plans to introduce federal legislation?
Yes, we really have a growing group of representatives that support decriminalization at the federal level and changing the schedule of marijuana substance. So, it's not a majority yet, but it's growing rather than shrinking. One of the things that I'm working on the political front is fearlesscampaign.org. And if you go to fearlesscampaign.org, you can sign up. We're basically creating a grassroots movement towards changing our federal drug laws in one of the areas. It's fearlesscampaign.org/marijuana.
Excellent, excellent. Now, you, of course, representing the state of Colorado, we talked about the KushCon event that happened there in Denver. A lot of people, around the country may not realize that it's Denver and not Los Angeles or any place in California that has the most marijuana dispensaries per capita, I believe. So, coming from an area that has so embraced the medical marijuana, what are you telling your fellow legislators on Capitol Hill as far as what they can expect from medical marijuana in their state?
Well, they can expect jobs. They can expect reduced crime. They can expect increased tax revenues. So they can expect to reduce suffering of patients. So, you know, that's the type of things that they can expect. When Colorado voters overwhelmingly passed a medical marijuana law, the legislature took their responsibility very seriously and passed laws to implement that. So there's a very, I mean, it's far from perfect, but compared to what other states are, there's a decent regulatory structure here, and there's a specific rules that the marijuana dispensaries have to play by, and it's really enabled them to grow and flourish in the communities that allow them. We've had some communities that exercise their local discretion have chosen not to allow those kinds of businesses as well.
Mm. Now, recently, some of those regulations that have been passed in Colorado include a Senate Bill 1284 that came up with a lot of these new regulations for dispensaries. How do you see these regulations playing out in Colorado, and do they bode well for other states that are looking to pass medical marijuana?
Yeah, you know, and I think some of the fears of people that are opposed to medical marijuana, they're just worried that, you could have these stores anywhere and what's the control on whether they're doing it right. But, you know, we've had a regulatory structure for liquor stores for a long time and also for pharmacies. I mean, we know how to do this kind of thing. It's just a matter of doing it right. I mean, having background checks for the people involved. We have the video cameras and so forth monitoring the premises, audits to make sure that the people have the right medical permission. So, it's not as difficult as it sounds, and in many ways it's easier than some of the other substances that are already regulated.
Mm. We're speaking with Representative Jared Polis, Democrat from Colorado, second term in the House of Representatives. I'm curious about your background, sir, and how you came about the marijuana reform issue. Was this personally important to you, or just what shaped your views on this issue?
Well, it's important to a lot of my constituents. Again, it wasn't really an issue until Colorado passed the medical marijuana law, and that was the will and the law of the voters of Colorado. So at the federal level, I try to back that up, and I try to make sure that we don't have federal agents coming in and arresting law-abiding people in Colorado. We're trying to open up the banking resources for Colorado dispensaries that have really faced a lot of discrimination and difficulty with normal banking services. So really just trying to support local businesses and my constituents.
Mm, okay. And I'm looking through your background listing here in Wikipedia, and it points out that you were the first openly gay man elected to the House as a freshman representative. And I'm in the marijuana law reform. We've often heard a term, you know, where people will say cannabis consumers need to come out of the closet and admit that they are just regular law-abiding folks that use cannabis. And of course, that's a reference to the whole come out of the closet in the gay rights movement that has led to so many positive strides in that area. Do you see a comparison between the two movements in that respect, in the need for the consumers of cannabis to be more open about their use?
Yeah, I do think they need to. It's really it's been kind of something that wasn't talked about, something that was, secretive, even though, oddly enough, people would frequently, brag about or talk about being on much harder core substances. They say, oh, my doctor gave me morphine or something, to kill the pain, or I had to take a Percocet, after my dental surgery. And but yet they don't talk about, using medical marijuana. So, yeah, like any other issue, the visibility helps, because it helps people realize, oh, it's my friend, it's my neighbor, it's my cousin, rather than just something abstract. And once they have that human face to go with it, I think it really helps shift their attitudes.
Also, looking back through your career here, I see that you were you worked with the State Board of Education since the year 2000. You formed the Jared Polis Foundation, creating opportunities for teachers through the Teacher Recognition Awards. Looking to the fields of education and science, one of the things that we've been disappointed with in the Obama administration is they said that they would base their decisions based on science and bring science back to the fore. And we're finding, though, in the area of marijuana research and medical marijuana, that doesn't seem to be the case. If you had the chance to speak with Mr. Obama and get a chance to educate him on the issue, what would you tell him?
Well, you know, I think first of all, the scientific jury is very much still out. There need to be a lot of double-blind studies to look at the different impact of different substances. So, I mean, there's a lot of science that needs to be done, it is being done. But part of the problem is the laws have gotten in the way of the science. It was very difficult to conduct research with marijuana, and still is, by the way, compared to many other substances. So, we need good science, but we need the laws to allow the good science to occur, and that's the type of policies, and to try to give some backbone to members of Congress, why we launched the Fearless Campaign .org as well, to help try to move the country forward. I mean, we're at this point where close to half the country supports medical marijuana, and it's close to that for marijuana legalization. It's probably in the order of 40%, and yet far from 40% of Congress supports it. I mean, you only get a handful of members, myself included, that are willing to say that, but it's nowhere close to the way that society itself has evolved on this issue.
Mm. Representative Polis, are you still sitting on the subcommittee for legislative and budget process?
That's the Rules Committee. Yes, I am on the Rules Committee. I am.
Does that committee at any time have any input, or does it ever examine the federal budget? Or am I thinking about the wrong committee here when I see legislative?
No, it would probably be the Budget Committee that does that. We have a subcommittee on rules that provides kind of the rules aspect to the budget. But no, the budget comes through the Budget Committee, which is a different committee.
Mm. Okay. I was going to go in the direction of Mr. Obama's answer to the LEAP question that came up in the YouTube, where they, asked him about the, ending the war on drugs, and Mr. Obama responded with talk about more treatment and more education and shifting that. But of course, our federal budget doesn't recognize that at this point. It's still 2-1 in favor of incarceration and interdiction. Contributing here to this budget process and getting the federal government to shift more of their resources, what's going to have to happen to make that happen? What kind of political obstacles are in our way from moving toward a budget shifted more toward treatment?
Yeah, and I think the budgetary pressures, and there's going to be, there's cuts really across the board in every area, do provide a good entree for a discussion of decriminalization, because not only do you have the savings from the reduced incarceration and the ability of law enforcement to focus on criminals rather than users of medical marijuana, you also have increased revenues from the taxation of the legal and regulated sale of marijuana. So it's something that, as we're looking at this budget situation, it can actually reduce costs and increase income. And I think that'll be more desirable for most people in our country than having tax increases or having cuts in programs that they care about.
Mm, it's like the call we've seen from a lot of our organizations to the new GOP majority. We're saying if you're looking to cut wasteful, inefficient government spending, look no further than the DEA. Is that something you're on board
with? Don't have too many people running around saying, please tax me. But I think that's something that the marijuana industry is saying, please tax us, rather than sending all the cops to burst down our doors. So, I think it's the least we can do is tax it.
Yeah. Representative Polis, as a representative from the state of Colorado, of course, it's natural to understand why you'd be in support of the medical marijuana issue and keeping the feds' hands off of the medical marijuana states. But, of course, also Colorado has its share of farmers, and the industrial hemp issue is one that we often don't talk about. And maybe we should. What's your take on that, and what are you doing for industrial hemp?
Yeah, I think industrial hemp has a lot of economic opportunities for farmers in our area and nationally. It's a very durable crop and a very strong market demand, and yet we still have laws that prevent it from being cultivated in many areas. So, I'm actually very much involved with trying to get that legalized as well. I'm a co-sponsor of that bill, and we'll continue to push for hearings on it as well. I think it's a much easier case than anything else that we're talking about. It really doesn't make any sense to prevent the industrial cultivation of hemp.
Yeah, and of course, the other thing I wanted to ask you get to work in Washington, D.C., and of course, Congress has allowed D.C. to proceed on its medical marijuana program. What's it going to be like in D.C. with yourself and your colleagues walking around town and perhaps happening upon a medical marijuana dispensary or two? Can you imagine that looking forward?
Well, the visibility is good, you know, just as we were saying, it really is. The fact that, you know, people will be, it'll be your, you know, your staff people, your friends that are there, the visibility that people will see, that the world doesn't end. Hopefully crime in D.C. will go down as a result of it. Tax revenue will go up. So, you know, again, still the majority of members come from areas that don't have medical marijuana, and so they don't have any exposure to it, like the people from, you know, California, Colorado, Nevada do. But at least they'll get exposure to it in D.C., and I think that'll be a positive thing.
We're speaking with Representative Jared Polis, Democrat from Colorado, encouraging you also to check out fearlesscampaign.org. And Representative Polis, before we let you go, I wanted to ask also what your future plans are in and out of office. Do you plan on keep running for re-election from the House, moving to the Senate, or just a couple terms and then maybe back to private life?
Well, you know, one thing at a time here. I just got elected to a 2-year term, so I'm very much focused on that. You know, I haven't made any decisions for 2 years from now, but there's a good chance I'll run again. But you know, it's a fun job. It's an exciting job. I'm honored to be able to serve the country. We have a ways to go on this issue, marijuana legalization, and we have a ways to go on a lot of other issues. If you know, if everything that I wanted on that I supported happened tomorrow, then I wouldn't have any need to be in Congress anymore, but I don't see that happening. We got to work hard to make it happen, and we'll get there eventually.
Well, we can work hard together to make it happen, and we often encourage people to call their legislators to convince them to support marijuana reform, but we also convince them to contact the legislatures who do support us and let them know that we thank them for doing so. So, Representative Polis, if people would like to contact you by email or other methods, do you have some contact info for them?
Sure. The website is just polisforcongress.com, polisforcongress.com. You can email us through that as well. Our political office phone number is 303-381-0121.
All right. Representative Jared Polis from the great state of Colorado, thanks for coming out to that Cush Con.
Normal Show Live reminds you to never consent to a search. If you're holding, then you consent. In most states, you will be arrested immediately and you will go to jail. If you don't consent to a search, police may try to intimidate you by threatening to bring in drug-sniffing dogs or try to fool you by saying things will go easier if you consent. Yeah, easier for them, sure. Stand your ground, refuse the search, and ask the officer if you're free to go. If they still detain you and eventually find your contraband, you'll be no more busted than if you had allowed the search. But by refusing the search, your attorney has a chance to win your acquittal before a judge. If you consent to the search, your attorney's hands are tied. You can find a list of Normal Legal Committee attorneys specializing in marijuana cases by visiting the Find a Lawyer link at normal.org.
If you like what you hear and would like to donate to the cause, send your check or money order to Normal Show Live, 1600 K Street Northwest, Suite 501, Washington, D.C., 20006. Your donation is a tax-deductible gift to the Normal Foundation and will be used to help support this online media. Thank you.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Hoo-ah! Radical rant.
We've been covering the subject of drug dog searches here at Normal Show Live and the Normal Stash blog at stash.normal.org. Of course, the use of canines and their incredible olfactory powers has been used for many, many years to detect drugs, to detect explosives, to search for missing bodies and so forth. And nobody claims that these dogs aren't incredibly talented and naturally gifted at being able to do so. The problem is that we introduce a human element into that in the form of the police handler. And I've got a couple of stories that illustrate the problems that I have with the use of drug dogs to pursue warrantless searches against cannabis consumers. This recent story comes from the Chicago Tribune, or an analysis of data from the Chicago Tribune, that found 56% of drug dog searches in the Chicago suburbs found no drugs whatsoever. And an analysis of 3 years' worth of data from suburban Chicago, the Chicago Tribune discovered that only 44% of all roadside searches following a canine alert for cannabis or drugs turned up any cannabis or drugs or paraphernalia. Shockingly, but not surprisingly, that success rate drops to 27% for Hispanic drivers. We are using these drug dogs here to alert to justify a warrantless search that turns up no crime 56% of the time. And the justification here is not valid. First of all, we talked about the reaction to the master's unintentional cues. This was a story that came out of UC Davis and how they found drug dogs to alert 200 times falsely in this study. What they had done is they had brought 18 drug dog handlers and their dogs to an abandoned church, and they outfitted four rooms and told them there might be up to three cases or three alert spots, three spots where there would be drugs hidden. And in none of the rooms was any drugs hidden. Now, in the first room, there was nothing different about the room. In the second room, they placed a piece of red construction paper, which they told the police officers would indicate a room that had some sort of contraband in it. In a third room, they placed sausages and tennis balls, something that would be very interesting to a dog, not that interesting to a person. And in the fourth room, they placed both the red construction paper and the sausages and tennis balls. So we had four different rooms. We have one control room with nothing in it, one room with something that alerts a person, one room that alerts a dog, and one room that would alert both. And they found, while there should have been no alerts whatsoever because there was no drugs in any of the rooms, they found these dogs alerted over 200 times. Each one of these teams was given 5 minutes in each room twice and ended up with over 200 false alerts. And they found that the false alerts were more pronounced in the rooms that had the red construction paper. That is the red construction paper that would alert the cop to thinking that there was drugs in that room. The dogs pick up on the handler's subconscious signals that there must be drugs in the room and give the false alerts, far more than they gave false alerts in the rooms that had no construction paper but also had the sausages and tennis balls that the dogs would be interested in. So we demonstrate in that study a handler bias that is subconsciously being picked up by these dogs in something that the researchers call the Clever Hans effect. Clever Hans was a horse back in the 1900s that the handler said could do mathematics. He'd say 2 + 3 and the horse would move its hoof, you know, stomp its hoof 5 times. They discovered, of course, that the horse was reacting to subconscious cues from its handler. It couldn't really do math. So not only do we have the unintentional cues from the master here, but we also have a situation where these dogs are not held up to any standards of accuracy. According to this story from the Tribune, the dog teams are not held to any statutory standard of performance in Illinois or most other states, experts and dog handlers said, though private groups offer certification for the canines. Well, I'm sorry, private groups aren't good enough. If these are going to be used in a court of law and they're going to be used as an instrument of law enforcement, they need to be subject to laws, subject to the laws of the people to indicate their accuracy, their training, and their handling. Also, let's talk about the possible racial profiling going on in here. The civil rights and advocates and Latino activists say the findings support complaints that police unfairly target Hispanic drivers for invasive and embarrassing roadside vehicle searches. The state's data, in which drivers and officers aren't identified, show that the average false alert led to a stop lasting nearly a half hour. One Crystal Lake search led to a 3-hour stop of a Hispanic man in 2007. He was stopped for a license plate registration violation, according to the data. Now, dogs do not have the human failings that have led to the targeting of minorities, but Virginia Martinez, a Chicago-based staff attorney for the Mexican-American Legal Defense and Education Fund, worries that an officer's bias can translate through the dog leash. She fears the drug-sniffing dogs are another tool to justify roadside searches of innocent drivers, the unfair consequences of what she called, quote, driving while Mexican, end quote. And when we compare that and we take that data where, you know, 44% of the stops didn't found drugs in all stops, but only 27% found them in the Hispanic stops, add that to the UC Davis data about the unconscious cues from the handlers. And so you have a situation where if a handler believes that Mexicans are more likely to be carrying drugs, that belief translates through to the dog that picks it up, who then alerts, and then we've got the guys standing on the side of the road while you go through all their belongings. Now, they're justifying these. The police, by the way, the police are justifying this. They're justifying these failing grades. They're saying the 46% that turned up something positive is to be understood because sometimes these dogs, their noses are so sensitive, they're detecting the residue of cannabis or drugs, even as the suspects themselves don't have any actual cannabis or drugs on them. Again, from the Tribune story. Dog handling officers and trainers argue the canine team's accuracy shouldn't be measured in the number of alerts that turn up drugs. They said the scent of drugs or paraphernalia can linger in a car after drugs are used or sold, and the dog's noses are so sensitive they can pick up residue from drugs that can no longer be found in a car. Since September 2008, Deputy Jeremy Bruchetta has handled Sage, one of McHenry County Department's two drug-sniffing German Shepherds. Officers sometimes come up empty-handed in searches of vehicles that clearly once contained drugs, he said, recalling a traffic stop in which a man, reeking of pot, had a marijuana stem stuck to his shirt, but no drugs were found in the car. Alex Rothacre, who works with some 60 area police dogs and handlers at Topps Kennels in Grays Lake, rubbed a bag of marijuana against a cinder block on the wall. Two German Shepherds he trained alerted on the block with little hesitation, earning sessions of play with handlers who control the dog's beloved chew toys. That's the defense? You're getting 44% accuracy rate here in detecting actual drugs, and your defense is that your dogs are alerting and you're throwing people's stuff out of the cars on the side of the freeway because maybe somebody smells like a crime? Somebody might have had pot on them when they were in my car, and so now I need to stand on the side of the road while the rubberneckers stream by and pass judgment, and two or three police cars come by to dismantle my Hyundai? Really? Because I might have given a hitchhiker a ride who might have been, trimming in Northern California and had weed residue on his hands when he touched my door handle? I may have given my car keys to a valet parker who might have had, a baggie of cocaine in his pocket, and cocaine residue ended up in my car? That's the justification for putting me on the side of the road in handcuffs? Really? That a crime might have been going on? That we can smell somebody who might be a criminal? That's what we've come to in this country? What if someone were to, take some freshly harvested buds and rub them all over, state representatives' cars and police captains' cars and city council persons' personal cars and, let's go at random on luxury cars in jewelry store parking lots. Let's rub some fresh cannabis all over them so the drug dogs will false alert on their cars and put their rich ass on the side of the road getting the Cadillac torn apart. Let's see how quickly that policy changes. Wait, I forgot. Don't bother. It's not like the cops are going to call the canines to search for drugs in those cars in the first place. This is what it's come to here in America, folks. We have defined drug dogs as being some sort of scientific instrument, when in fact, there's nothing to blame the dog here for. Don't blame the dog. I mean, they evolved to smell things and please humans. And that's all they're doing. They're going out there and doing their job, and they know that if they smell the drugs, it pleases their human handler. Now, there may be cops out there that are using these drugs reliably. There may be tests to show that these dogs can be used accurately. But until this can be shown to be a scientific item, we cannot use this to prosecute people in America. Imagine if we had some sort of wand, and we could wave this wand at you, and it would detect whether or not you're a child molester. We just wave this wand, and if it goes off, you're a child molester, but it's only accurate 44% of the time. You want to be waved down by the wand? You want that wand to possibly go off just because the cop thinks you look pervy? That's what we're doing with drug dogs in this country. When cops think you look like a druggie, when cops think your car might have drugs on it, they are causing their dogs, either subconsciously or overtly, to alert on those cars and to bust cannabis consumers, and the practice needs to end now. Thanks for joining us here. I'm Radical Russ. Stay tuned for Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio, for Cannabis Carrying Gun to John. Take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seat, you're planning. it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.